Because that's what we do on the Protectors Podcast. Welcome back to the Protectors Podcast. I have an excellent guest today. We're going to talk about something a little bit different. We're going to talk about what is going on behind that badge, behind the scenes. And the guest today knows. She's lived it. Catherine Boyle, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Now, it's great to catch up finally. And you know, one thing about my life as a semi-retired person is trying to schedule things. So I appreciate your patience.
Happy to be patient. I'm excited for this.
Now, Catherine, you grew up behind the badge. What I mean by that is like your dad wore the uniform, retired Philly PD, your family, everybody integrated, your whole life was pretty much behind that badge. And there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that people have no idea. So let's jump right into it. Let's get a little quick backstory on you and your dad.
Yeah. So I grew up in Philadelphia. As you mentioned, my dad was a police officer for as long as I can remember. He was lieutenant of Special Victims Unit. I think one of my earliest memories is when he got the promotion to lieutenant of SVU. And my almost all the men in my family actually are cops. So both of his brothers, my mom and all her sisters happened to marry cops. And a lot of those guys had sons who followed in their footsteps. So I grew up around a whole lot of cops. And what I remember growing up is just that my dad was a dad first and foremost. And he really made it a point to go out of his way to be present for us and be there for us and give us the best home life possible. And he worked really hard at that. And he had a lot of support, you know, from my mom, because he definitely couldn't have done it alone. And it had a huge impact on my upbringing, on who I am today and who my siblings are today. And I really want to kind of afford that opportunity to more families in policing today.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the backstory of your dad, because I didn't, when we were talking about how your dad was in law enforcement and he retired PD, but him working, especially in a supervisory position, in order to get there, you have to work.
Yep.
And Special Victims Unit, though, and then having children and coming home after seeing some of the the absolute worst of people, and then coming home and being a dad. So what was like your first real realization of who your dad was? I mean, like, you know, teenagers, they kind of know, they're on their own little world, but what was the first time you actually were like, wow, dad does that, dad deals with that?
Yeah. And actually, for more context, so Philly SVU is split into two categories, kind of. Sexual assault is one, and then children and at-risk people is the other. And obviously, you know, he did admin for both, but he was lieutenant of the children's sector. So he really worked with the kids and the at-risk people and things of that nature. And yeah, as you mentioned, he had three young kids at home. And for me, I didn't really understand what he did, you know, most of my life. When I was in eighth grade, he had a really high profile case. And there was a lot of news coverage. He actually ended up getting an award from George Bush, who was president at the time, for solving it. And so we kind of had to know a lot about that case. And that was kind of the first time that I really sort of registered what he did. But it wasn't until I was much older where I think I had the maturity and the understanding of really knowing what he did. And that case was traumatic and it was a lot of things, but it wasn't, you know, what you might expect out of Special Victims Unit. And when I was older was when I understood that he actually dealt with some really scary people and some really horrible tragedies too.
And then it's not just the people, it's not just the victims, it's what comes around with it too. It's like, it's very emotional dealing with the victims, but then when you have the families too, that are always want to know, how are you going to solve this? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And you have to take that. That makes you want to work harder. 99% of people makes you want to do everything you can, including, you know, leaving that badge on at night, looking and scanning and doing whatever you can, trying to put these pieces of the puzzle together. Did you start noticing things different, like with your dad, with his stressors? I mean, we kind of pick up on what's going on with loved ones, but that must have been really interesting.
Yeah, he was actually, and this is one of the reasons that I feel so strongly about, you know, the whole family element, is because he was really, really good about compartmentalizing. And when he was a cop, he was a cop and he was all in, and he was the best cop you could ask for, the best supervisor, mentor, lieutenant, all of it. He was the best possible. But when he was home, he was home and he was in dad mode. And he did a really good job of sort of drawing that line where if he was with us, then he was with us, and he didn't have his mind in other places. And he was also really good about, you know, balancing home and work. And he would work really hard on a case, but unless he, you know, needed to take on additional hours, take on overtime, he really tried not to take on unnecessary overtime.
That must have rubbed off on your brothers as well, as if now they went into the job, and yourself as well. Because, you know, this kind of rolls into everything, is like, leave the job where the job is. Mm-hmm. But have you seen this with your siblings and your other relatives as well? How they kind of not really divorce themselves from the badge when they leave work at the end of the night, but they kind of leave it there?
I would say, so my siblings and I actually didn't go into law enforcement. My dad was very against us following in his footsteps. And, you know, that's an interesting question. I would say I kind of see it across the board in my family, in some of my extended family. Some of them are still active, some of them are not. And I would say I can see the differences. There are definitely some who were cops like my dad, and there were some who really were, you know, married to the job, all in on the job, identified as the job. And I see the negative impact that it had on them too.
What type of negative impact are we talking about? Because I know a lot of us, you know, for once in a while, you jump into the bottle, you jump into other addictive substances, other depressants, because you're always living the job. You can't get away from it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and divorce is also a big thing. You know, extramarital affairs, the impact that it can have on, you know, your offspring, as we're talking about. So really, yeah, I've sort of seen it all. And I actually, it's an interesting topic because I never really put two and two together. You know, Susie may have gotten divorced, you know, when I was a kid, but I never thought anything of it. I just thought they got divorced and that is what it is. Not everybody stays together. But then, you know, again, with maturity, with age, with life experience, I can kind of look back and more things make sense and more things kind of click for me as an adult.
Well, you know, it's like you go through these emotional periods, like, I don't know if it's emotional maturity, immaturity, but you change. Mm-hmm. You may start the job with one image of yourself and one version of yourself, but after years you change, and like, you may be changing, everybody else around you is changing their own ways and going their own direction, and you're sticking on your direction. So yeah, I could see how that a lot of people, like, you know, when they start the job, eventually don't end up with the same people.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that's also interesting to note too, is especially with my dad. So he was 30 when he became a cop, and that's not often the case. A lot of these guys are becoming cops at 20, 21, 22. They don't know who they are. Their identity is not formed. I don't even know if their brain is completely formed. So, you know, they're coming in and that's sort of all they know. And I definitely think that that's something my dad kind of had going in his favor, is he had a very strong identity, a very strong understanding of who he was and who he wanted to be and how he wanted to live his life when he got into the job.
He brought up a great point, because, you know, me growing up, I wanted to be a soldier and I wanted to be a cop. So first thing I did was I became a soldier, and then I became a Fed. And then, but the thing is, like, that's been my whole identity forever. Mm-hmm. And that becomes your identity. So when you're 20 or 18, 19, 20 years old, and you get into one of these positions, that's like your identity. That's like your whole mm-hmm. identity. And you don't, you haven't matured enough to understand anything outside of that identity. Mm-hmm. So you start hanging out with the cops, start mm-hmm. being with the cops, you know, then nobody understands what you're going through except the cops. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I could see how it could kind of skew you. And I could also see how, like, going into it at a later age, when you're more mature, when you've done more life experiences, might be a little bit different.
Yeah.
So now we have to figure out, how do you get people to leave that badge, especially the younger crew, leave that badge where it is. And at the end of the night, you don't have to be a cop. You don't always have to be on alert. Mm-hmm. And just like when the soldiers come back from war, you don't always have to be looking for the IED on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you divorce yourself? And I got to stop using this word divorce, because we're using it all the time. But how do you get to that point where you, like, you could have a healthy life outside of the job?
Yeah.
Do other things.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm, you know, trying to figure out. And for me, you know, a big thing that I feel really strongly about is, one, bringing in people who have done it. So, I mean, my dad, he has his experience, but then I also have connections and people that I've met along the way who sort of learned a little too late, you know, what identifying as the job can do to a family. And now they're making up for lost time, or, you know, maybe they lost their job and they sort of learned the hard way. So really bringing these people with these experiences to some of those younger cops, or maybe they're not younger cops, maybe they're just cops that are sick of identifying as a job, whatever it is, bringing those people to them as resources, as sounding boards, as, you know, someone who's really been through it and can sort of provide additional insight, provide some perspective. Because, you know, in 30 years, 40 years, when you retire, what's going to happen then, you know? So bringing those pieces together, and then also bringing together the men and women who do want to go home at night. Maybe they don't want to go out to the bar after their shift, or they don't want to hang out with the cops all the time because maybe it brings them down, maybe it bums them out, whatever the case is. Maybe they want to have, you know, different relationships, and sort of bringing those people together so that, yeah, sure, I'm bringing together a bunch of cops, but they're cops who want to have different extracurricular activities. They're cops who want to connect with their families, better their lives outside of the job, set themselves up for retirement, whatever that is, just a different, you know, a group of people with different priorities and values, I guess.
This episode brought to you by Blackstone Publishing. I am super excited to tell you that Joshua Hood's new book, The Guardian, is out now. You know, I love this description. From the master of action and USA Today bestselling author of Robert Ludlum's Treadstone series comes a new thriller as intense, as fast-paced as The Bourne Identity. Joshua Hood really is the real deal. He is the master of action, and he has the background and intensity to back it up. Make sure you check out The Guardian now, out everywhere books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, your local booksellers. Check out The Guardian by Joshua Hood. Well, sometimes when you put a spark into someone's mind too, at an earlier age or even at a later age, you could start anytime. You could be like 50, 60 years old and start new. Mm-hmm. You could be later. You could be earlier. You could be 30. You know, I used to always give the analogy of, like, up until about 41, 42, I've always had like a professional resume where I'd get all the education and all these certificates and all this and all that, and all I ever did was work on the ultimate resume. And I hit a point where I'm like, you know what, I never worked on my personal resume. Mm-hmm. I never worked on things that I enjoy, that are things outside of the job, things outside of getting that next step ahead or getting that next title or getting that next position. Mm-hmm. And once you find out that you can do other things, like hobbies. Can you imagine having a hobby? Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Imagine, you know, that.
So yeah, that's the thing, is finding the next step and sometimes learning from other people, especially mm-hmm. experiences. So when you talk about bringing people together and building the network. What was your first step when you started doing this?
Oh man, I started with my immediate circle because obviously, you know, I have the family piece and that branches out into, you know, who they know. And from there, I sort of went on to LinkedIn. I tried to utilize Instagram, didn't get very far. So LinkedIn has been helpful. And I just sort of started reaching out to, you know, police officers, active, retired, and asked if they wouldn't mind sort of letting me pick their brain. And they did. And I've learned so much. It's been incredible.
That's a huge thing. If you're younger, older, and I'm just going to say everybody should be always networking. Mm-hmm. And it's not always about the ask. It's about like me, like with hobbies, like my new thing is photography. I want to learn as much as I can about photography. Not that I want to be like this world-class, like, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist or photojournalist or anything, but I just want to take really cool pictures. Yeah. So reaching out to people and networking, say, hey, I see you did this. How can I do that? Same thing when it comes to like, if you're doing a podcast, I've gotten so many guests off of LinkedIn, so many guests off of Instagram, is just being able to take that step and ask. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, build relationships with people.
Yeah. And I will say, so you mentioned about, you know, building your professional resume, not having any hobbies, et cetera. I wasn't a police officer, but I can absolutely relate to that. I worked in fashion. I lived in New York City for 12 years and I hustled my butt off. I always needed to be racking up the experience, adding different things to my title, whatever I could do, whatever experience I could get, I was getting it. I always had 2, sometimes 3 jobs. And a lot of that came from just reaching out. I was fearless in that I would just walk. I worked at Bergdorf Goodman, which is a high-end luxury department store in New York City. And I had no qualms about walking into the vice president's office and just asking her questions. And I mean, as a result, she loved me. She got me all kinds of jobs and experiences. And so I really didn't even second guess myself when it came to asking for help or asking because I wanted to learn. And I think that that's serving me today.
Absolutely. And well, it got you to this next level where you're actually doing something different. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the basis of coming on the show is like, what's your goal? What's your end state with your projects?
Really, I want police officers to see that they can be present at home. They can have a fulfilling life and they can also be an excellent cop. Not only can they be an excellent cop, but I think if they are present at home and they have a fulfilling life outside of the job, that will make them an excellent cop. Because when you're fulfilled at life, then that's going to pour over in your professional life. And I really want to sort of provide the resources and provide just the awareness that it's possible. Because I think a lot of people don't even think it's possible. Maybe they don't even think about it. They don't even think to do a gut check on themselves and their families. And I really want to sort of just bring that awareness to people in the police force, bring the resources to them and connect them to one another so that they can lean on each other and learn from each other and do things together, that don't necessarily relate to the job or are not necessarily negative habits or
I was gonna
not
say, like,
positive
toxic
habits.
I had to toxic. Throw the word toxic in there because it's like, you know, one thing you do find out about cops is you can have some toxic conversations. You can have some toxic relationships and the finding that happy medium. And you bring up a lot about the family and having places to connect and talk to other people and knowing about leaving the job. Because if your family is not happy, or your relationships aren't happy, the people around you aren't happy, and it rubs off on you, it could be dangerous. Mm-hmm. Absolutely dangerous. I mean, especially in law enforcement, when split seconds can, if your mind is somewhere else, it could be life and death, life, death, limb, everything.
Yep. Without a doubt.
Well, I appreciate you. Let's talk some more about what do you want to talk about, Catherine? I'm here for you. This is the Protectors Podcast, and I love talking about first responders, people that support them.
I actually think you brought up a good point because I understand the idea of going out, hanging out, getting a beer, being with other cops who understand, you know, the negative attributes of the job, and how it can also negatively affect, you know, your home life. You know, maybe your wife is nagging you because you're working too much or you're not engaged or whatever it is. And I understand that concept, and I'm not a mental health professional at all, but you also have to think like there's, you know, hanging out and feeling understood. And then there's this idea of trauma bonding. And I feel like it's a slippery slope, you know, where sure, an innocent drink after work or hanging out with the guys and girls can start one way, but there gets to be a point where you're just bonding over the traumas that you experience. And that's not going to help anyone. And that's not going to better your life or your home life or their life. And it's just not going to be productive.
Trauma bonding is huge. I mean, it's like, who's seen the worst of it all? And then you get the black humor, where it's like the dark humor, where it's like, oh wow, did you see their body, their limbs? This was there, this was that. And death becomes like second nature to you. Mm-hmm. Now, how many professions out there, you know, outside of the emergency responder community, see death like that? Like the second after it happens sometimes, or sometimes you're the cause of the death, or sometimes you're people you work with are dying. Mm-hmm. The death is always in the air. And the fear of death, or the courage under fire, the death is there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's a different profession. So the badge is different. You know, it's a shield for a reason, you know, but you're that factor between life and death of maybe even civilians. So living with that trauma, and I could understand the trauma bonding, but it's getting to that level where you could do it. You could speak about it. You could extend the grief out of your body, but not just living it, not just 24/7.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, there's the dark humor. There's a coping thing back behind that. I'm sure that's a coping mechanism. The trauma bonding, I'm sure, is there for a reason. I'm sure it feels good to know you're not alone. And, you know, there's a time and a place, right? Like, sure, it's okay. Maybe you need to use dark humor to get through a day or a call or an experience or whatever it is, but it can't envelop who you are or your whole lifestyle, your whole way of living. So having hobbies, like you said, having outlets, having resources, having people that you can call who aren't going to bring you back into that negativity, back into the trauma bonding, people that you can call so that you can, you know, be human and experience it, experience the emotions you're experiencing and acknowledge them and actually work through them.
I dig it. So your goal is to have an online platform and community for people to actually have a network. And
Yes, so I'm working on an online community. I launched it a couple of years ago, and I'm working on fixing a few things and relaunching it in about a month or so, so that, you know, it's not going to be on Facebook. It's a private community. You got to be a cop to be a part of it. And I want it to be a platform for these people to find one another. So whether it's an experienced guy like my dad who's on there offering, you know, sage advice, or, you know, a cop who lives in the middle of nowhere who just experienced trauma for the first time, and maybe the town hasn't seen a crime in 20 years and he doesn't know what to do. So he can maybe come there, find a guy like my dad and talk it out. Or maybe my dad can provide resources, or I can provide resources, whatever that looks like, so that he doesn't feel alone. He doesn't have to feel scared to talk to leadership, whatever it is. And then I also want to do this through online and in-person events. Like I said earlier, I feel very strongly about bringing these people together so that they know that they don't have to go out drinking if they want to go out with cops. They can go out and do something a little bit more productive for their lives but also with other cops. And then online events, because it's just a better way to impact more people. And, you know, sometimes people feel a little bit more comfortable, especially post-COVID. People are a little bit more acclimated to the Zoom life. And it gives me kind of the ability to bring on different experts from across the country.
I dig it. It's going to be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to checking it out when you re-roll it out and then providing a little input. Maybe yeah. I can come over there and chat. I could always talk crap to everybody.
Yeah, I love it.
Catherine, where can everybody find you?
So I'm very active on Instagram, the LT's daughter. I do have a LinkedIn, although I have a very common name. So I will give you the link for my LinkedIn. And yeah, I would say Instagram is the best way to get a hold of me. I'm very active on there and anyone can shoot me a DM. And I've got an event coming up in August. The first Monday in August, I'm going to be doing my first Zoom event. And that's going to be about finances for law enforcement families, because I mean, that's a whole nother podcast, but finances are a major stressor. And you know, one thing, like I said earlier, my family worked very, very hard to make sure my dad didn't need to get stuck in an overtime trap. So I feel very strongly about that as a result. So we're going to talk a little bit about how to avoid that and how to budget for your future and stuff.
I appreciate you. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you for having me.